It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Welcome in. Quite a Monday here following the Sweet 16 / Elite 8 weekend, Easter weekend. Hope it was a good one for you and your family. If you're back to work today, hope you enjoyed Friday off if you had it. If you don't, then I hope today is a good off day for you if you had today off and you worked Friday, however it worked out. I don't know if I said that right or not. All right. Point is, if you've been able to enjoy some time off and enjoy time with family, I hope it's been good for you. All right. Let's jump right in. We have much to get to here. The slipper still fits, to coin the phrase from the NC State radio broadcast many, many moons ago. State topped Duke 76-64 in the Elite Eight, where the Blue Devils just came apart. Of course, DJ Burns was the star, leading the way with 29. DJ Horn had 20. O'Connell, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals. And State is in the Final Four for the first time since 1983. Joe Giglio, we talked with him earlier on the Talk of the Town. We'll have an encore of that for you coming up a little bit later on in the program. But NC State will advance to take on Purdue. And Edie, who scored 40 points for the Boilermakers, McCain ended up with 32, a game high in a losing effort. He played absolutely sensational in what is probably his last game as a Blue Devil. Let's hear from the participants. Let's start with Kevin Keats, who says he is not surprised by the Wolfpack's success.
I mean, it's a miracle run, but we're not surprised. Like, we didn't come into this tournament and said, hey, let's just try to be here. We came here to win it, and we did. So now we got to move on to our next stage.
DJ Burns says they were encouraged by Keats at halftime.
He was just happy. We were losing the game and we didn't get yelled at. It was kind of cool. You know, he was like, play some good defense. He was like, y'all can play in good defense. Y'all go out there, repeat that again. We're going to win this game.
Yep, and they did. Duke probably needed to be up more than 6 at the half in order to win. And then the Blue Devils just bogged down offensively. Michael O'Connell, who I think has been the key to the Pack's success, he's run the point for him. They are a much more composed and together team with him running the show. He talked about how everyone is pitching in during this run.
Everyone's been making huge plays down this run, and that's why I think that's why we're getting these wins, and it's been big for us. You know, obviously he's playing unbelievable. I mean, both these dudes are. Mo's been killing it. Casey, everyone has been playing has had such a big impact.
Pilk, do we know the difference between the Shire cuts? Do you have a pretty good idea on that or no?
I have an A and a B.
Okay, but you don't know which one is which?
No.
Okay. All right. Let's hear from John Shire. Hit it.
That was a start. And, you know, look, with Burns and Horn, they're obviously, they've done this a lot to other people, but you can't let both of them get going.
All right, Shire there talking about couldn't contain the Pack's top players. This is the thing, though, where I think he really hit the nail on the head about the Blue Devils offensively.
Never. And so in the second half, they started to score more, and our offense just – it's probably the most disjointed game that we've had all year.
Jeremy Roach echoed that sentiment talking about how the Blue Devils struggled on offense.
Stuff like that, us not moving it side to side, getting it to second side and stuff, it was kind of sticking. I mean, that's what happens when people switch. But, I mean, just give credit to them. We weren't us today.
Well, and a lot of that, too, a couple things. I think NC State got into the particularly Filipowski's head in the second half. And I also think that you know, what Duke was able to do with some toughness against Houston on Friday night, they just didn't display that same time. In fact, they kind of panicked, I thought, in the second half offensively. you know, Shire went on to talk about how, you know, we didn't have a single transfer. We are doing this with freshmen and sophomores, and that's great. But, you know, that's, I still think his biggest failing has been roster construction and roster management, especially this season. The Wolfpack are there because they're older, not because they're maybe a more talented team, but they're winners of the ACC and going to the Final Four because they're older and they've got guys that have played a lot of basketball. My buddy, the Ebb from Greene County shout out, and my buddy, Anderson, who graduated with an engineering degree from ECU but went to NC State and got a degree originally. I guess Anderson's going to the Final Four in Phoenix, and he was sending me this tickets. You know, there's good seats. You're kind of in that lower bowl. Of course, it's in a dome, so it's pretty massive. But 30 to 40 rows back, it's in the range of $800. Couple tickets in the 700 range in that lower level. I mean, good seats courtside, so I mean, it's not outrageous. The thing I'm hearing that is really crazy are the flights and obviously the hotels. I mean, you can get a ticket because it's a dome and it's a big, you know, arena. The scalpers are going to, or on the secondary market, they're going to hold you to the fire, but so much. But it's just the accommodations and the travel that is the big thing there. There was something else I had, too, regarding all of this, and can't find it anyway, so that's... But that's sort of the recap of what we had with the games yesterday. I think Purdue won a little tougher than Tennessee down the stretch. Did not see any of the Saturday act. I was working Saturday, so I didn't really see any of that action as far as those games. I got to see the second half of one of the games. I don't remember which one it was. But UConn, obviously, I listened a little bit to UConn, and they just were just picking apart Illinois. I was shocked at that. And that kind of what reminded me last night of the Duke situation where they just went cold and couldn't get anything going offensively. It reminded me of Illinois, just couldn't get anything going offensively. Pirates get a sweep over the weekend. They get a one-hitter on Sunday. We'll hear more from Cliff Godwin coming up, but right now here's what Coach G had to say about the pitching performance.
Norby set the tone for sure, and we just wanted him to go out there and close out the first inning, but gave us four, and we were pushing his pitch limit, but we're going to let him face that lefty in the fifth. But he gave us a great start, and then, of course, Danny Bill was great, and Richie was great.
More on our Pirate Report, Coach Godwin talking about getting the sweep.
It's tough, yesterday, a doubleheader, tough to navigate. Especially on a short week. And I thought our guys did that, and I thought they came out with a ton of poise and energy and focus to start this game off.
And Coach Godwin, on the quality of the bats of the team.
You know, that's the thing about our offense, man. I feel like it's pretty lengthy when guys are focused and what the plan is, and Coach Lartigue does a great job with those guys, and Bryant Packer does a great job with those guys. So just want them to continue to focus on winning pitches and having quality at-bats.
Coach Godwin, on the way the team performed through almost half the season, or has performed through almost half the season.
I'm proud the way the guys have put together a solid start. In the third season, we're 4-0, but we've got a really tough week coming up, at NC State and then at FAU. So they're going to have tomorrow off and hang out with their families for an Easter, and then, we'll get back at it on Monday.
Yeah, those were the comments after the Saturday win. Speaking of Ethan Norby, he talked about mixing up his pitches.
Really just mixing it up as much as possible. Trusting my stuff was, just going out there and competing as much as possible, honestly.
Norby on how he likes to attack on the mound.
Try to go out there and just try to mix up the fastball in and out, change their eyes, and then just catch them off guard with the slider, the changeup. Just trying to keep going attacking those guys.
And he credits his defense.
Oh, it's amazing. I think the first play, the second out of the game was a ground ball to a star, and it just felt great knowing those guys are out there, and then he got my back.
And this is Coach Houston. As we shift to football, Pirates had their first scrimmage over the weekend, and he talked about that on Saturday.
Exciting first day in the stadium from a scrimmage perspective. You know, went about 100 plays today. Everybody got work. Saw a ton of positives. Obviously, things to correct. But I thought for the first scrimmage of the year, the thing I was most pleased with was just we weren't sloppy. You know, I thought our execution was pretty good, both sides of the ball, for the first time in a game situation. Really appreciate the officials. I hope the officials did a great job also today, just, you know, keeping us going. But, you know, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy out there. You know, big plays by both sides of the ball. So I think just, you know, great way to cap off a really, really solid week.
All right, Coach Houston, on the balance of wanting both sides of the ball to do well.
We gotta correct some mistakes. You know, we don't want to turn the ball over. But you know, the defensive side of him, he's excited. You know, about forcing those turnovers. And then, you know, offensively, you know, love the explosive plays. I mean, we had so many today. Now, defensively, we can't have those. You know, that's what you got to prevent is the explosive plays. So that's why I say just, you know, a lot to correct, but so much to be excited about going into next week. And I told the kids, now the challenge is we got to have a better week next week than what we had this week. And if we have a better Saturday next Saturday than we had today, then, you know, we're really pleased going into the last week of spring practice.
And this is Coach's thoughts on the play of the quarterbacks.
You know, we got to eliminate the turnovers. And, you know, that's very correctable. But I thought we made some great throws today. We threw some receivers open. I thought the receivers did a great job of being consistent with making plays. So I think there's things to correct and a lot to be happy about.
And last one here from Pirate Football Coach Houston on Chase Soule and how he looked in his first week back after missing the first week of spring ball.
You know, he's only had a few days back, but, you know, had multiple explosive plays today. So, you know, he showed his ability. And I'm excited next week he's healthy for a full week.
All right, that is it for today's Pirate Report. Big opening segment. We'll be back right after this, and we'll go inside the ECU clubhouse with Pirate coach Cliff Godwin, Joe Giglio encore later on the Patrick Johnson Show. And don't forget Inside Pirate Athletics coming your way tonight. From tiebreakers, more Pirate baseball with Coach Godwin, Danny Beal, Joey Barini, and Cam Clunch. It's time to go inside the Pirate Clubhouse. Coach Cliff Godwin joins Steve and I go and myself as we welcome Coach Cliff Godwin in following a day of rest, a true day of rest with Easter and all of that brings. Coach, that shift in the schedule this week and gave you and the team a day to kind of recharge, reflect, and enjoy. And as you look back on the past week, give us your assessment of the 4-0 ECU week.
Well, the end result can't be any better, you know, go 4-0. I thought, you know, the UNCW game, really proud of our guys, get down 4-0 when we've been talking about being the aggressor, but we're down 4-0, and I thought our guys showed a lot of poise just to hang in there, not lose the game early, you know, still give us a chance to be able to come back and win. I thought our pitching staff, our bullpen was outstanding. To allow our offense to get their feet underneath them. I thought Chaz Myers getting a swing off there in the second inning was a big deal just to get the crowd back into it a little bit. But super proud of our guys just the way they fought to the end and were able to win that game after being down 4-0. Then you go to, obviously, weather effects to the Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You got a doubleheader. Thought Trey was really good. The wind's blowing in. I thought we did enough offensively to be able to win the baseball game. Of course, and we expanded late, which was good. Sheetman was really good. And then Root was not sharp, but he just managed the game and just kept us in there and hung around and ended up pitching up 7 innings and only giving up, I think, 3 runs, which was awesome. And then, you know, Jake Hunter closing out that game. So you have a doubleheader and you're going to throw 4 pitches, which is probably the first time in the history that I've been the head coach here that's happened. And we hung on, you know, we're up 4-3, hung on to the lead, which, is great to continue to get in those one run games, not necessarily fun, but it continues to prepare you for the postseason when you're able to win those one run games and then flip around to Saturday, quick turnaround, And I thought, number one, our fans were awesome. You know, I put something on social media, and, man, they were loud early. They got us in the game. We were able to get a lead. Ethan Norby, his performance, he wasn't supposed to go that long, and he was fantastic. And then our bullpen was fantastic with Danny and Richie as well. And offensively, we just were able to score, put some runs on the board, and win 7-1. So we definitely have more in the tank offensively, and I think that's going to continue to grow as we continue to get towards the end of the season. Like I keep saying, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So we want to continue to get better and keep playing our best brand of baseball at the end of the season.
It's another doubleheader day for Coach Godwin. He'll be with us tonight on Inside Pirate Athletics. Clonch, Beal, Barini, those will be the players, too, that will join Stephen and myself and Coach Godwin from Tiebreakers coming up at 6 o'clock. Cliff Godwin is with us here. With moving Jake Hunter into the second game of the doubleheader, is the role for him now out of the bullpen and the Sunday starter of the game, or game three of a series starter, more now a week-to-week decision?
Well, I think we'll probably go into this weekend. I haven't talked to Coach Knight yet, but TBA, probably, I would say. Now, Jake can still start, and we've talked to Jake about that. We feel like Jake is a Swiss Army knife from on the pitching side of things, that he can pitch out of the bullpen. He can start, as we have other guys. I mean, Norby was out of the bullpen at UTSA. He started. Jaden Winter had a great preseason as a starter. So that's not out of the question that he could start at some points in time. So it's always good to have some swing guys in the when I say in the bullpen, that can start, or starters that can throw out the bullpen. It just gives you more flexibility as coaches.
Coach Ethan Norby, you touched on it a little bit earlier, but obviously I think this is now seven straight scoreless innings over his last two appearances. And what's kind of been the difference for Ethan over these last few outings?
I think it's been a couple of things. I think Coach Knight and him working on some mechanical things that he just got kind of off a tick, kind of over Christmas break in the preseason. It kind of continued probably to get worse until AK caught on video, and he's able to, I think stay on his back hip a little bit longer, which allows him to throw to the level of velocity that he was able to throw in the fall. I think that Old Dominion game was like 82, 85, which we knew something was off a little bit. But I think it was good for him at UTSA coming in and having some success. You know, it wasn't perfect, but he had some success, and just letting that confidence build. I think he knew it was in there, but this game challenges you mentally, as it has other guys on our team, even older guys. When things aren't going well, you start second guessing yourself, and you just got to really dive back into the processes that have made you successful. So really proud of Norbs just staying the course and taking advantage of an opportunity he was given.
I believe it was Friday, game one, when you guys executed, once again, the two RBI suicide squeeze. And, if you're not, I think if you're not there in person, you don't really get the appreciation for the execution. You know, both guys taking off on the pitch. And second time y'all have done that, Barini again delivering, and, pretty awesome stuff, Coach. So just take us through those moments when you're trying to figure out the right time to put the play on and the execution behind it.
Well, we'll probably never be able to run it again this year because there's much media attention it's gotten. Even talking to the coach at UTSA, I mean, he's watched video and on it, and he knows we have it in our back pocket. And, that makes me a little bit nervous about, even doing the squeeze. But I felt like it was a great opportunity. And, of course, Shaq does an unbelievable job of getting it down. But Bristol did a good job at second base of taking off when he needed to take off. And it's really tough to defend, even if you know it's coming. And I think they were screaming out of the dugout. But it's just one of those moments where if you haven't practiced it a lot, you probably can't defend it.
And Root maybe not being as sharp, but still going seven. Is he learning, how to pitch, if that makes some sense? I mean, obviously last year wouldn't have been able to navigate something like that. But it seems like he's had a couple of outings where he's maybe not had his best stuff, but he's been able to work and be effective still.
Yeah, I think the last 3 weeks have challenged him in different ways. I thought Liberty came out and just were like, hey, man, we're going to swing because he's around the zone. And within two pitches, there's guys in the first inning on second and third, and he hadn't been punched in a mouth like that at all this year. So having to navigate that, and they really had a good approach against him to going to UTSA, giving up a run early, then kind of finding himself and – striking out five guys in a row to us not playing great defense behind them and them getting some ground ball singles and some, you know, not hard contact singles and him giving up some runs to this week. He was on short rest and just not, he didn't have his best command. I would say it was tough for him to, you know, really locate the baseball where he wanted it to. So I think all three outings these past 3 weeks have challenged him in different ways, which just makes you a better pitcher because as a starting pitcher, probably 30% of the time you feel great. You've got all your pitches in your back pocket and your command's great. Normally something's off. Your body doesn't feel great. Your command's not great, or you don't have your slider. You don't have your changeup. And I think it was good for Root to have to go through these 3 weeks because there's going to be other times this year that he doesn't have his best stuff.
Coach Ryan McChrystal had a huge hit in the UNCW game. Swung and missed twice, but then made an adjustment, got that go-ahead hit. Just what have you seen from Ryan getting more consistent playing time, but also making the most of his opportunity?
Well, he sent me a really awesome text message, Saturday night, which I won't reveal all of it, but he's been really consistent with his processes for about a month now, doing his daily schedule. And I met with him a month ago and just said, hey, what have you done consistently over an extended period of time when it relates to baseball? And he was honest with me, which I think that's the first step, and goes, nothing. And I said, hey, we got to sell out to something, whatever those three or four things are, whether it be, getting extra hitting in, watching your highlight video, reading your daily devotional. But he's played a lot more freer because he's told me that, with me speaking about my faith and him diving into it a lot more, that has allowed him to just not worry as much, not have as much anxiety, and to go up to the plate and just play freely. So, that's really what we hope for all of our guys, is just to be able to go out there and play freely.
And you mentioned earlier Chaz with the big swing against UNCW, and he had a, he was a guy who had a great offseason and maybe, struggled a little bit early. Is he a guy, along with maybe Colby Wallace, a few others, we could see, continue to get more and more playing time, especially, bringing some right-handed punch in the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, we faced a lefty that night, and we felt like it gave him an opportunity to play first base, and I think he'll continue to get opportunities. Cam Plunch will continue to get opportunities. Colby Wallace will continue to get opportunities. Luke Nowak will continue to get opportunities. As Walker Barron, I think those are really good players, man, that, they're getting their opportunities. It's not as much as I'm sure as they would like, but they've been great teammates to this point, and it allows them to go in there and play to the best of their ability. I mean, you look at Colby, what he did coming off the bench on Sunday, which you can say, well, you guys had a 4-run lead when he came off the bench, or a 5-run lead, but man, he makes an unbelievable play at third base. He hits a double. Actually made two really good plays. One, which was a bang-bang play at first base, kept the no-hitter alive at that moment. So I thought that was a really crucial play and a big-time play.
We're talking to Pirate head coach Cliff Godwin. ECU baseball with a 4-0 week. They moved to 4-2 in the AAC. Coach, as far as great teammates, he was on Steven's show. He'll be on with us tonight, Cam Clonch, and one of the seniors that, had an open dialogue with you about his season, and he's someone that has a lot of respect of a lot of his teammates, all of his teammates. A little bit of Cam's role, and it is tough to kind of stay sharp and stay ready when maybe you're in that position and you're a veteran guy.
Clonch has been a great teammate. He's one of the most respected players in the standpoint of the entire team, not just the position player group. I mean, if Clonch speaks up in that locker room, people listen, and it's because they know that he really, really cares about East Carolina baseball. He wants to win. He works hard at practice, and he's a cool dude. I mean, guys like being around him, so he's kind of the unicorn from a leadership standpoint. So guys really respect him, and he's just been such a breath of fresh air to coach this year because he definitely wants to play more. I mean, look, that's not a secret by any means, but he also wants to win, and he wants his senior year to be one that is remembered. And I think that has been a neat thing for me to be around. I've said this before, but nobody understands the situation that Cam Clonch is in more than me, because I was a part-time player 95% of my career. So I get it, you know, and I think that's one reason God put me in a position to coach is to understand what guys go through when they're not guys that are out there. Coach Knight and I were talking this morning just about our players. And, you know, I think that our players sometimes think that we think about the guys that are playing every day the most. We actually don't as coaches. We're thinking about the guys that don't play every day the most because we're trying to figure out how we can help them to, you know, help them with their pitching or help them with their hitting or help them with their defense or help them with their mental game processes, whatever it may be, to allow them to be the best version of themselves. And, you know, it can get lost in the shuffle, I think, when you're in the season that they can think that you don't think about them. But we think about those guys more than we think about the guys that are running out there every day.
Coach, NC State tomorrow night, there'll be a lot of emotion there. There's the Makarevich factor as well. Obviously is going to be discussed. You're going to be asked about it. We're asking you right now.
You're the first one. I knew it was coming. I didn't know it was coming this morning, but I knew it was coming. And look, I just want to say this, and I want everybody to hear it. I don't have any ill will towards AMAC. I'm glad he's having a great year. I probably would have handled some things a little bit differently back in the fall. What I would say is I gave him everything I had, every ounce of energy, compassion I had until the end. And obviously I was hurt when he left, but it looks like he made the right decision. He has played more freely. So I guess I did hold him back. That was not my intention. So I wish him the best, man. And I want to win the game, but I have no ill will towards AMAC, and I hope he has a great rest of the season. But we still want to win the game.
It's going to be another one of those instances too, before we let you go, where it would be a big crowd, big environment, that sort of thing. You got to be hyped. This is what you come to East Carolina to play. And I know these are you're intense every game, but these are probably the fun games to coach too, in a way.
I just want our guys to go out there and compete at a high level. Of course, it'll be a great crowd. NC State's got a great team. Coach Avent and his entire coaching staff do a great job with their players. It'll be fun. You know, this is what college baseball is all about. It's a rivalry game. It's at their place. They're good. We're good. So it'll be fun to be a part of.
Hey, Coach, thanks for the time. As always, we really appreciate it, and we'll look forward to catching up with you this evening.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Overall, it was a solid weekend in Pirate Athletics as the baseball team swept UAB for their first conference series sweep of the season. They will be back in action tomorrow when they take on NC State in Raleigh right here on 94.3 The Game. Network coverage will start at 5:45 for that just after 6 o'clock first pitch. The softball team won 1 out of 3 at 25th ranked FAU. It was a hard fought series for Shane Winkler's team as they won Thursday night in 14 innings. They dropped the Friday contest 10-7 and then a tough extra innings loss on Saturday, but they have beaten two different ranked opponents for the first time in a same season since 2007. They will be back in action tomorrow at Campbell. However, you'll probably have to follow along on Twitter if you can't make it over to Bowie's Creek at 5 o'clock, as that game is unfortunately only on Flow Sports. Looking at NASCAR, Denny Hamlin beat all of our favorite drivers last night as he got his second win of the season at Richmond in the Toyota Owners 400. They will stay in the state of Virginia this weekend as they will be at the Paperclip in Martinsville. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we will be joined by Joe Giglio to talk about the Final Four as his NC State Wolfpack will be making their first appearance since Jim Valvano was at the helm of that program.
Of course, NC State making it to the Final Four, first time in 41 years. Pretty hard to believe. But the Wolfpack are there. They knocked off Duke yesterday. Joe Giglio from the OG podcast, our friend, also covered the Wolfpack for a number of years with the NNO and WREL Sports Fan. He talked with Henry Hinton this morning on Talk of the Town about the magical run for the Pack.
Joe Giglio is one of the most well-known sports guys in the state. Wrote for many years for the News and Observer, had his own radio show in Raleigh for a while. He's now part of the OG's podcast with Joe Ovius, and He probably knows as much about NC State basketball as anybody. Joe's on the phone. Well, how you doing, Joe?
I'm doing great, Henry. Appreciate you having me on.
So I woke up this morning thinking this must be an April Fool's joke. But I guess they're really going to the Final Four. Is it true?
Yeah, I think you could have told a lot of NC State fans that Westmore and the women would be going to the Final Four, but there probably was maybe on one hand the number of people you could have counted who would have thought just 19 days ago that NC State would be going to the Final Four. On the men's side, it's truly been an epic run by the Wolfpack men.
So I was hanging around doing the Carolina games back in the 80s, and when they made their run to and won the national championship with Val Vano. And, you know, this team actually seems like they've got more of a chance than that team. Nobody believed that team was going to do it. You know, the road, though, now, they got to get through Purdue with, you know, with Edie. What is it, Eddie or Edie? I never can pronounce his name.
Edie.
Thank you, PJ. That's the third time I've had to ask him this morning, Joe. Anyway, so they
talk good.
But you know, I said earlier that, you know, with the big beer truck in there with DJ Burns, that, you know, maybe that's a better matchup than anybody's had with that guy up till now. What do you think?
Yeah, these two teams actually played 2 years ago in Brooklyn, and the game went to overtime. It was not a good State team. It was a good Purdue team. But Zach Edey only played in 12 minutes in that game. So we'll definitely see a different version of Purdue in Phoenix. But, yeah, I think the matchup, you know, you're talking about two guys who probably get fouled more than anybody else. Edey usually has a better whistle than what DJ Burns gets, but I think DJ has made the most of it during the NCAA tournament. I also think he's been much more efficient around the basket than he was during the regular season. So, obviously, his scoring has been one of the primary reasons that NC State is in the position that they're in.
I want to ask you if you think NC State can win and win the national championship, but I honestly, at this point, I mean, I think anybody would be foolish to bet against them ever. I mean, they just seem like a team of destiny, don't they?
The joke here in Raleigh with a lot of State fans has been, since they've legalized gambling and legalized basically NC State fans betting against their own team on purpose, NC State is now 9-0. So it can't be a coincidence, right? But no, listen, you mentioned the 83 team, and I was only 7 years old when that happened. But I did follow college basketball. I did remember that Houston team. And obviously now history tells us they had two of the greatest, the 50th anniversary of the NBA, they had two players on that team in Clyde Drexler and Akeem Olajuwon, never mind the rest of the athletic cast.
Yeah.
That Guy Lewis had, right, and the Cougars had. So you would go into that game thinking about the same odds as you would if NC State were to beat Purdue in the final, like this UConn team. UConn has won.
Yeah, you're making a great point. I mean, nobody gave them a chance to beat Houston. I mean, Houston was hot. They had Olajuwon. They had Drexler. I mean, it was an unbelievable basketball team. And again, it just looked like State willed themselves to win it back in 83, just kind of like this team looks like, right? I mean, here's the thing about NC State right now, though. They're not just beating these teams. They're dominating them. I mean, they dominated Marquette in the second half. They dominated again last night. It's just not expected, is it?
No, and the only thing that's been fluky about it was Mike O'Connell's three against Virginia. Everything else, right, say for the first 10 minutes of the Louisville game up in D.C., everything else has been NC State staying on schedule and just being a better basketball team than the team they're playing. Just so happened that they ended up playing Duke twice. I thought Duke was the better team in the first half yesterday, clearly. But I thought Burns took over in the second half. They didn't have a response. They just could not respond to him yesterday. So, but no, for the most part, NC State's merely just been outplaying teams. I was just looking at their three-point percentages. You know, their best game was the game against Duke up in D.C., 7-16. But, you know, they were 3-13 yesterday from the three-point line and won a basketball game. But that's not supposed to happen in 2024.
Was Kevin Keats going to get fired?
If that Louisville game went the way that it was going, there was a real chance. Yes. Now, there was some financial – there was more of a financial hurdle there than most NC State fans were considering or wanting to consider. So I could have seen a scenario where they even lost the Louisville game and he came back. But, no, I think the odds are, the chances are, that if they had lost that first game up in D.C., then NC State would have be, you know, Pat Kelsey would be NC State's basketball coach right now.
I think it's kind of cool, man, because I've seen so many guys that I think were great basketball coaches get fired because fans are impatient or, you know, maybe in his case not impatient because he's been there long enough to start winning, I guess. But this team had the ability to win. They just didn't they didn't have the will before they got into the ACC tournament. But, you know, there's so many times – I mean, it's a great story for Kevin Keats, in my opinion, because now, I mean, you look at Kevin Keats and he might be the hottest name in the country. I mean, is anybody going to come after Kevin Keats and try to hire him other than NC State, even though he's got a new contract now?
Yeah, his extension goes through 2030. So, but, no, and I don't think anyone would blame him. You know, it's been a – it's been a little bit of a bumpy ride. I think people can forget about some of the NCAA issues that were there, and then also just the pandemic itself and the oddness and awkwardness that created, and all of the extra years of eligibility that it created, and really instability in college basketball that it's still causing. So, you know, I think Ohio State and Louisville and some of those other jobs being filled probably closed the door on something like that. But it's a weird world. You wouldn't have expected NC State to win this many games as it is. But
he's losing everybody, right?
No. I mean, he'll lose DJ Horn and DJ Burns, but you know, Modiar.
So he's losing everybody.
I don't know. Modiar has been a revelation in this tournament, and then you know, Ben Middlebrooks has been very good. Michael O'Connell, the three-pointer. Without that three-pointer, they're nowhere. So in terms of some stability by 2024 standard, having three main guys back is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I think the O'Connell kid has been kind of an unsung hero in all this. He's hit some big shots and good ball handler, a lot of nice assists. And you think about – I mean, yeah, did North Carolina – raid the entire Stanford team last year? We got two guys that went to Carolina and then O'Connell went to NC State. I mean, what was that all about? How did all those Stanford guys end up in the triangle?
Yeah, it's weird. I've asked the question myself because former North Carolina assistant Jared Haas was the coach there at Stanford. But I think it gets back to the NIL equation. And some schools like Stanford are not going to participate in NIL. And if you're not, then you're going to get left behind.
Have they said they won't do NIL at Stanford?
They have a super proud all-around athletic program, and they're
which is going to go right down in the toilet if they don't play in the NIL game.
Yeah, they've been hesitant to say that they were going to reward certain programs over others. So, we'll
crying out loud. That sounds like some Stanford stuff. I've been to Palo Alto. I know what it's like out there. All right, Joe Giglio. Joe, what's going to happen? Can State win at all?
I mean, I think they can, you know, only for that historical, you want to leave the door open. You know, you've seen it happen before, but UConn has really been head and shoulders better than everybody else, and they seem to be intent on repeating this thing. I didn't think the NCAA did them any favors with the bracket they were put in. But ultimately, you know, Auburn getting bounced early and then Iowa State losing to Illinois. I think even their road was not as difficult as it could have been. But they've certainly been focused, and I expect them to handle Alabama in the other side of the semifinal, and we'll see what State does with Zach Edey. I think all along, the whistle has helped NC State. You kind of wonder if that rubber doesn't meet the road with some of that luck
Yeah, I was reading an article by Rick Pitino this morning, and they asked him how to beat UConn, and he said they got to have an off shooting night. That's the only way anybody's going to beat them.
Yep, and that,
and of course, you know, ECU
would need to do for sure.
ECU fans have a reason to kind of pull for UConn. We got Tristan Newton, who's, I mean, what a great story. What a great kid. Tristan was, I got to know him when he was here. Tristan's a great kid. And, you know, now first team All-American. I knew he was good. I didn't know he was going to end up being that good. So he's been fun to watch, too.
Yeah, and they have a transfer from Loyola, Maryland, too. So it's not, you know, UConn is definitely in the blue blood conversation, but they've built this roster unconventionally.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot, man. Thank you for being on. It's great talking to you.
Absolutely, anytime.
All right, Joe Giglio.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Philip Pilkington getting you home here on this Monday edition as the P-Man is on his way over to tiebreakers for Inside Pirate Athletics. He will be joined by Stephen Igoe, Coach Cliff Godwin, and some Pirate baseball players as they recap their 4-0 week from last week against UAB over the weekend, and they will preview the week ahead as they get set to take on the NC State Wolfpack tomorrow, which can be heard right here on 94.3 The Game, as well as all three games this weekend against the Owls of FAU, as our Pirates will be down in Boca Raton taking on those Owls. But we have talked a good amount of baseball on this episode with Cliff Godwin, going to, well, I guess not transition into basketball, as we just heard some basketball from Joe Giglio. We get set for the Final Four. It's just 5 days away, and there could not be any more polarizing experience in this Final Four as UConn comes in as the defending national champions. They will be taking on the Alabama Crimson Tide, making their first Final Four appearance. Also, Purdue hasn't been since 1980, so it's the first in the lifetime of any of these players. Same thing with NC State, not having been since 1983. This is an interesting matchup, I think. We're going to start on the left side of the bracket, look at this Purdue-Alabama matchup. UConn-Alabama matchup. Look, it's clear. The UConn Huskies are the best team in the country. There's no doubt about that. That point guard they got, he's pretty darn good. It'd be nice if ECU could have a point guard like that guy. Oh, I really think this basketball team might be cursed. I don't know. I would like some Pirate fans who are older than me to reach out and let me know if we like sold our soul back in the day to get into either one of those NCAA tournaments. I hope I'm wrong, because I really do believe in Mike Schwartz. I think he can turn this thing around. But I tell you, when I see UConn play, it's just like, what the heck? We had that guy. I know that was under a previous regime. That was a long time ago, but had him and Jaden Gardner, and still finishing bottom half in the conference. But hey, we finished up at the front this year, got a bye for the first time. So things are turning around. Mike Schwartz is doing a good job, but it's just, I don't know, a little frustrating. But moving on, UConn, look, they're the best team in the land. And I don't think there's many teams that can beat them. Now, could they beat themselves? Could they have a bad day? Of course, right? They're human. Alabama might be one of those teams, though. I don't know if they can just beat them straight up, but what I will say about this Alabama team is they can score 105 on any given night. They play so fast, they shoot the ball so well, that if they are making shots at a 55-60% rate, which is highly unlikely but is not impossible with this Alabama Crimson Tide team, they could jump up and get UConn. I think they're one of the few teams that can truly beat UConn. Then we look at the other side of the bracket. Purdue, NC State, very similar types of play. A true number five that they like to work the ball inside to. Good guard play, but probably relies a little more on the inside game. Plays a slower style of basketball. This is going to be a tough test for NC State, because what they were able to do against Duke was slow them down, play a physical brand of basketball inside, not make it a game of guard play, but make it a game of post player play, and they were able to win the game because they made Duke play their style. And that's what you have to do when you're the least talented team. What worries me about this NC State team in this matchup is Purdue plays their style. Purdue is a much better team. Now, NC State believes. They do. I was talking to Kaysen Romali, intern of Hoist the Colors, and yeah, I even texted him before the game. I was like, how confident are the boys? Should I be worried? He just responded, yes. Those State boys believe the mind is a powerful thing. It can take you a long way. But there gets to a point where it can, you know, being hot, believing in yourself can only take you so far. And I'm not saying they're going to lose this game to Purdue, but this matchup between Burns and Zach Edey is going to be something special. And DJ Burns is going to have a filling out period, I think, maybe the first 4 to 8 minutes of this contest, because he is not going to be able to do to Zach Edey what he's been able to do all year. And he did it, you know, he was decent against Carolina. Well, the second game he was, or the last game, I guess that was the third. So, you know, but it took him a while to figure out how to do it against Armando Bacot. And doing it against Zach Edey, he's on another level. Bacot's good, but I think Edey's a little better. But one thing I will say, I think this could be, especially in the game of the left side of the bracket between UConn and Alabama, these could be games where offense matters. I know the old saying is defense wins championships, and some people are not going to like me saying this, but I think it might have transitioned to offense. Well, maybe defense does win them, because at the end of the day, everybody's got a great offense to be able to play defense, but in order to win one. But I have a friend who texted me today and said he made a bracket based off each team's how high their offense was rated in KenPom. He is in the 99.7 percentile with that bracket, meaning he has a better bracket than 997 of every 1,000 brackets. And it's just based off the KenPom offensive rating. So, who knows? Maybe one of the defenses will prevail, but I tell you, it's a scoring man's game right now, and it's been a scoring man's tournament. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about it more throughout the week, though. Preview these matchups farther in depth. But that'll do it for our show today. Thank you to Patrick Johnson. Thanks to Cliff Godwin for joining us. Steven Igo, Joe Giglio, and the Big Hen, Henry Hinton, making an appearance on the Patrick Johnson show today. So thanks to the Big Hen. Stay here for Inside Pirate Athletics right after these words.